Hi, welcome to the Wellness Doctors Podcast with Dr. Lorena
and Dr. Vanessa.
We are both medical doctors who talk about how to optimize health and well-being so that you can be empowered to make better healthy choices, enrich the lives of people around you, and join us in the evolution of healthcare. Hi everyone, it's Vanessa here. Today we have a really special guest all the way from the US. And it's amazing how technology can put people together. But today we have someone called Paul Pellenuster. And Paul is a very special guest because not only is he an addiction counselor, but he started a series of, almost like a movement of using music, not just as the peripheral, but as the core of treating addiction. So welcome, Paul.
Thank you for having me. I like the word movement because that's what I usually call it.
Great. So that's where we agree on something right off the bat. So let me give a little bit of introduction to Paul. So not only is he an addiction counselor, but he also has his own recovery journey. He's the co-founder of Recovery Unplugged, which he started in 2013 and now has several locations in the US. There's also a foundation called Face the Music Foundation, which is a nonprofit organization that helps individuals with limited means to access addiction treatment and increase the support for substance abuse prevention and aftercare through music-based programs. And finally, he's an author of Music is Our Medicine, The Story of Recovery Unplugged. So quite a list there, Paul. A lot of achievements. Well done.
Yeah, it almost sounds like I'm a musician. And to be honest with you, I'm not. this has nothing to do with being a musician. This just has to do with me recognizing early on as a child that music has certain assets and power that if harnessed correctly could be used for good.
Yeah, we all know music is something that is quite unique to humans. Like other animals can sing, but they sing almost as a way of communicating, but we make music purely for the joy of it.
Yeah, that's true. And music is very unifying.
Yeah. And the way that you weave music in addiction, I thought it was interesting because we think of we read on the news, you know, in gossip and TMZ, where a lot of musicians and drugs sometimes don't get on the right foot of each other, but they end up, you know, I think music has always been involved with creativity, right? And there are certain chemicals that help people become more creative. So I think for a lot of artists, it's almost like they using it to enhance their creativity, but then the drugs take control, and then they get into the wrong side of it. So could you talk a little bit about, you know, how you feel about the relationship of music and drugs?
Yeah, well, my journey starts when I was literally 4 years old. You know, it's weird. I don't remember what I had for dinner, but if you put a song on right now, it could literally take me back to when I was 4 years old. And so there is a lot of power that music has in terms of people retaining things. And as a clinician, as a treatment provider, I know, and probably your listeners would know, that what could be done in 30 days could be undone in 30 minutes. And the problem is that, you know, we don't have a form of retention. As a child, you know, I recognized early on when my parents would come home from a hard day's work and, you know, be totally tired, and they would put on a certain song, and I could tell you how old I am. It was with a phonograph, for those who you even know that what that is, is that their mood and energy level would immediately change. And you know, I noticed, you know, early on when I would go to my first concerts, that how come we were all jumping up and down together, whether we knew the words or not. You know, I was fortunate that I grew up around 15 miles away from the original Woodstock site of the 1969 festival. And even though I'm not that old, I would go there, you know, as a teenager, when I first started experimenting with drugs myself, and realized that music was the central theme to whatever we were doing. It was very unifying. And it's not like, you know, Vanessa, I then thought, well, and one day I'm going to use it to help combat addiction. You know, like it didn't happen like that. It was more like, hey, you know what? There's something magical How come, like, when I found out as a child, and my girlfriend broke up with me or something like that, I got like real angry and sad, but I wasn't able to cry. But like when a song came on the radio, immediately it got me to cry, and it was very cathartic. And it occurred to me that music could be used as a catalyst to not only engage the existing evidence-based models that we have to combat, treatment, but it could be used for the general public, especially in today's polarization and today's epidemics going on. Like, people are looking to feel better. People are looking to change their mood. And if harnessed correctly, I think that could be done. And that's why Recovery Unplugged was born in 2013, after experimenting as a clinician for 20 something years previous, and born as clients go to treatment were so high even after they went to treatment. My thought is, hey, we have to do something to own our side of the street as clinicians here, not just blame it on nature versus nurture. So that was my thought was I wanted to improve outcomes. I wanted to create more of, as you've alluded to already, a movement and or an experience for clients that was a more of a payoff for them to be clean than getting high, if that makes sense.
Yeah, because I guess for a lot of people who've struggled or seen those around them struggle with recovery, is that when life without using is more boring than life using, then naturally at some point your willpower gives up and you fall back into your old habits of using, because like you said, the payoff isn't high enough for you to want it.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Willpower is like battery power. It eventually runs out. You're exactly right. I'll take it a step further. It wasn't that life was just boring, but a lot of the clients, as you know, drugs and alcohol are a symptom of the problem. For instance, I don't know, a significant percentage of clients that I've crossed paths with, and it's been thousands over the years, use it to self-medicate, whether it's to deal with, anxiety or depression or, trauma or any of the above. So when one gets clean, if or abstinent from the drug, if they're still experiencing those, issues, why stay clean if you're going to be miserable? That's what I say. So music has this ability to, change your mood. It has the ability to put words in your mouth of what you're thinking or feeling. I always say that, sometimes clients, human beings, have difficulty sharing what they think or feel. But I guarantee you, somebody's written a song about it. So all you got to do sometimes is match the lyrics up to what somebody's thinking or feeling. And it not only helps put words in their mouth, help them identify the particular issue or challenge they're facing, but then that song can actually be used to reframe the whole thing. So it's really good how music becomes like the anchor, I didn't know, even as a clinician, there was so much science behind what I was doing. I really didn't know that, Vanessa. I really just thought that John and Paul were musical geniuses and divinely inspired. And by the way, I still believe that, but now I know that music pretty much communicates to the same pleasure centers of the brain that drugs and alcohol do, releases endorphins, increases serotonin levels. I could go on and on. And after all, the disease of addiction is a brain disease. It's a brain disorder. So why aren't we treating it as such?
Yeah, I think what you said has a lot we need to unpack. For example, when you said with lyrics, sometimes it helps people express their feelings or their emotions and their pain in words, and that helps them process, right? You're connecting the different parts of the brain where you feel something very raw, but you don't have the words to process it. And I think some people just find it hard to talk about it. And so when the counselor or the therapist says, hey, tell me about it, they don't have the words to express it. And therefore, it becomes really hard to process and get through it. So having lyrics helps them say things that not all of us are poets, right? So it helps us put it very eloquently in a way that makes sense. And I think the second thing is when you said when people go to concerts and they're all jumping and singing in unison, what is that all about? Why do I not get the same feeling when I'm just listening to music at home? You may feel it's good, but there is just a sense of synchronization. And actually that's what science has found, is that when people are listening to the same music in the same environment, their brainwaves sync to the same tune and the vibrations of that song. So if you're listening to a really upbeat, you know, high energy song, your brainwaves become that state and people around you become that state. And there's almost this amplification of brainwaves around you. Because it's all just electromagnetic field. So the more you have of the same coherence, it's just going to amplify itself. Yeah. So that's why people feel so united in concerts, is because their brainwaves are all talking to each other in the same language.
Yeah.
And that's amazing.
Yeah. So let me respond, because I feel like I need to unpack those statements. Because, like, you're exactly right. First of all, as far as lyrics are concerned, you know, I know for sure, like, let me give you an example. So there was once a client that I had, I don't know, about a year or two ago, who was in a group, and he was sharing in the group, right? You know, this is all cool and everything, but I still feel lonely. I know I'm around 12, 15, 20 people right now, but I feel lonely. And normally as a clinician, I was trained to respond, can anyone else identify with that? How does that make you feel? Is there anybody who wants to give Johnny feedback on that? Right. Like, and I'm not saying that's good or bad. Right. That could be brilliant. Right. Instead, what I thought of was a lyric from a particular song written by a group called the Eagles. And the song was called Desperado. And one of the lyrics said, so I said to the client, would it be fair to say that your prison is walking through this world all alone? Immediately he said, that's exactly how it feels. I said, by the way, would you mind? This is a lyric from a song written, by the way, in 20 minutes by Glenn Frey and Don Henley of the Eagles. Would you mind if I played it? I played the song on a YouTube kind of video thing that we have in all the group rooms. It bonded the clients immediately. People were crying. They gathered around him. Not only did he not feel lonely anymore, but any time from that day forward he felt lonely, all he had to do was push play. And, you know, he had to leave treatment eventually. So that was really something, you know, really powerful. As far as the unity, I think that you're saying something, Vanessa, more wise than you know, in that the secret to any good treatment center, in my experience, is not how good or bad the clinicians are. That might be half of it, but the other half is how is the milieu. In other words, what I could do in a group about, like, the dangers of benzodiazepine abuse, right? And a client can undo by glamorizing a war story about it in 20 minutes after the group is over. So what you try to do is you try to, by unifying the group, it creates more of a positivity family type atmosphere where it becomes much more of a therapeutic community. And I've found those are the treatment centers that have higher success rates. Those are the facilities where the clients tend to keep in touch with each other even after, at alumni events or at meetings or wherever, you know, they go. And as far as the vibration, I'll speak about my own recovery, if I may. You know, as someone who went through some really serious withdrawal symptoms myself, what I found, you know the term kicking dope? Have you ever heard that term?
Yeah.
Okay, so.
But maybe explain it to our audience.
So kicking dope comes from when you're withdrawing from heroin or any opiates. You have these, what's called these, like, jumpy legs. You can't really, it's like hard to, you just feel so uncomfortable in your own skin, right? what I found that was able to penetrate my jumpy legs, even if it was only temporary, was the vibration from especially old school hip hop, from the bass of some old school hip hop. The bass penetrated my legs because you can't really hear bass, you feel it. And so it was, you're able, it provided like some temporary relief. In other words, I didn't know this when I created the method. It was just born out of frustration, if that makes sense, of having horrible outcomes. And it occurred to me, you know, what is my job as a clinician? What is our job, right? It's to establish rapport with the clients. It's to lower their anxiety, change their energy level, change their mood. And as we talked about a little bit already, help them retain the necessary skill sets needed for recovery. Music has all of those assets. There are so many times. I was golfing the other day and I saw a gentleman who was in his probably 80s sitting on a porch while I was getting ready to putt. And I bring a little, speaker with me to golf. And so I just tried to, he looked at me and he looked like he was just focused on reading his book and I didn't want to disturb him. And what I did, just to experiment, I love doing this. I put on some Frank Sinatra. And as soon as I put it on, he immediately got up, looked up, started smiling and said, "They don't make it like that anymore." And immediately we got into a conversation. So there's a lot of proof of what I'm saying here. This isn't just theory.
So I understand that this is being researched, right, by the Nova Southeastern University in Florida.
Yeah, Nova Southeastern University is known for their mental health curriculum. And oftentimes what they do is they do studies on a variety of different things pertaining to different types of, you know, treatment methods. And they're really in the forefront a lot with that. And I guess around 3-4 years ago, they heard about this cockamamie idea of this guy, Paul Pellinger, using music to help combat addiction. And I think strictly out of not only curiosity, but also suspicion, they called me. And so I met with a psychologist. And he said, "Hey, you know, this is really unique. This is really interesting. Would you mind if I allowed some of my students and myself to, you know, do a study on you?" And I thought, well, you know, what does this mean? What does this take? And to make a very long story short, they've been gathering empirical data now for a few years in hopes of us creating our own evidence-based model, which is difficult at best to do. Because, you know, you double blind studies and things of that nature. But the reality is what they're showing for sure is our results, our outcomes are 4 times better than the national United States average. They're showing that clients that leave against medical advice, which directly correlates to better prognoses, is probably about 6 times better than the national average. And also, we have over a 95% approval rating from our clients compared to the normal 60 or 70%. And that's only if you have good food, by the way. So I know we're on to something magical here and something special. And, you know, I really just want to save lives here and I want to potentially break the cycle, you know, of addiction for decades to come.
Yeah, and I think the difference with your treatment rehab programs is that it's not just an add-on. It's not just a little bit of a nice thing on the right side. It's actually the core of the program.
Yeah, I mean, you're again, you know, we have the medical doctors, the board-certified psychiatrists, the psychologists, the registered nurses, the mental health technicians, the licensed clinicians, all of the necessary disciplines. The difference is we'll use the music and anything related to that, whether it's the lyric, whether it's the vibration, whether it's the live performances from the clinicians who are musicians that we have to engage the therapeutic process. I had no idea, Vanessa, that by putting this out there that I was going to cross paths with who I would consider some of the most legendary famous musicians in the world. And wow. That is one thing that still blows my mind. And the reason why that's important, not just for me, because I'm a, you know, starstruck kind of a guy anyway, but they now can also be used as influencers. Because when yeah. somebody like Steven Tyler or you know Ronnie Wood from the Stones or Richie Supa from Aerosmith, or I could go on comes out, Keith Urban, and I could go, and they start, you know, acknowledging that they're in recovery, that obviously is helpful, because as you know, the disease of addiction is one of the few diseases that tells you don't have one. And so there's yeah. a lot of denial. There's a lot of minimization, rationalizations, right? There's a lot of myths about addiction. And so when these guys, you know, come by the facility and talk to the clients and play and for them. And again, you could check it out. Just Google Recovery Unplugged YouTube. You'll see it for yourself who I'm talking about. It has this positive domino effect. And I've heard so many people say, hey, you know what? Like, I literally was about to shoot a bag of dope. And that song Amazing You and Richie wrote, you know, in 1993 came on the radio, and, you know, it convinced me, it gave me the extra push to go to detox that day or stuff like that. So it's really magnificent.
It sounds like a mini concert going on a daily basis at your rehab center.
You know, it's funny because when I first came up with the idea, friends of mine who owned other treatment centers and many people that I knew in recovery for decades were literally making fun of me. Like, wait a minute, I'm going to send you a crackhead to listen to somebody play guitar? How's that going to work, you know? And so I had to make sure that they knew, and I want your audience to know, that I did not create the method for as a gimmick or for niche or marketing purposes. Like everything I am saying now, like I can prove, like call my bluff. You mentioned I wrote a book called Music is Our Medicine, and that's one of the reasons why I wrote it. I initially thought I was going to get responses from family members of addicts or addicts themselves, or maybe even, you know, clinicians and providers that were going to start experimenting with some of the methods I talk about in the book. But the majority of the people that I get responses for are your everyday, as we in recovery say, normies, you know, just normal people that are stuck in traffic and frustrated. Crank up some music, as I suggested in the book, and it helped them get home not only safely, but also with a little less frustration.
Yeah, I think people don't realize how much music is a part of their lives. Like you said at the beginning, you don't have to be a musician, but everybody has some type of music in their yeah. lives. You know, we've done studies on babies inside their mother's wombs listening to Mozart and being a bit smarter and all those kind of, you know, it's more popularized, but the vibrations is part of it, the lyrics is part of it, but it's actually an innate part of how humans interact and be part of themselves. And we don't realize it, but sometimes we hum songs and hum tunes, mm-hmm. right? But what that is yes, it may be a sort of a songworm that's got into your head, but when you hum, you're actually activating the branches of your vagus nerve. So it's actually increasing your parasympathetic tone and it helps you relax. So people subconsciously do it because in a way it's sort of letting that stress and letting a bit of steam off. And so it's a very natural thing that we do. We just don't realize how powerful it is. And you've just managed to harness it and make it an overt, open way of using yeah. music to help
yeah.
people.
You know, I'm glad you said that, because when I was fortunate enough to meet, I mentioned Steven Tyler once, that's one of the first things he said to me was, you know, we were exposed to music when we were in our mother's womb through the heartbeat. So there's yeah. no defense against it. And so, you know, when you mention things like that, it really kind of, you know, opens my mind to, you know, there's definitely, you know, power in this. And, you know, I'm grateful that, you know, I just was able to, sometimes the best ideas are just the simplest, you know, and really, you know, that was always my intention. Everything, you know, we do, we try to focus on, you know, using what the best thing about music, and one of the best things about music is when clients leave treatment, I might have to tell them, you know, go to meetings, take your medication, stay away from people, places, and things, get a sponsor, but I'll never have to say, and don't forget to play music, right? So it's something the clients already want to do. So part of our discharge plan is we give them musical prescriptions. Matter of fact, we just trademarked in the States. There's a term called MAT. I don't know if they have that in Hong Kong or the UK or anything, but it stands for medication assisted treatment. We just trademarked MAT as music assisted treatment, and so that's something that's you know, certainly, you know, powerful. I guess I would say that there are two things I've never heard in all the years I've been doing this, and that's one, I'm a cannibal, and two, I hate music. So, you know, some like it more than others, but you know, that's certainly, you know, something that I'm very proud of.
Yeah, I think people don't pay enough attention to their bodies, and when music can actually be the key to opening up the pathways that you've forgotten, then it becomes it's a shift in your paradigm. Your whole physiology.
Good word.
Like you said, you're now reclaiming your pleasure center, which has been hijacked by drugs. You're releasing endorphins, which was the lack thereof that maybe drove you to drugs in the first place. And all these drugs probably fried up your brain receptors, and now you're reestablishing some equilibrium. And also, even our heartbeats and things can change to music. So going back to babies in mothers' wombs, what they realized was that babies aren't just listening to the music and going, oh yeah, that's cool, but they're listening to their mom say things, and they're measuring their heartbeats. So when the mom says the words like beba, right, and then it just goes beba, beba, beba for a few times, and then the baby gets used to that heart rate, and the mom suddenly changes this to ba bi, and the heart jumps. It literally skips a beat, or it goes really fast. It's like, hey, hang on, that wasn't right. So you're actually listening, even when you're a few months old as a baby in the womb. So there's no reason why as adults we can't do it. It's just that we're not so in tune with how our heart rate works and how our breathing is affected by it. So when you use music, you can actually change physiology. So depending on what music you choose, you can put yourself into different states, which is kind of like what meditation is. You put yourself in a different state. It's
exactly.
Just doing it. It's clearing your mind. You're not thinking about your past. You're not thinking about the future. You're just paying attention to one thing, and that thing is helping you change physiology, which is great. It sounds amazing. It's just neuroplasticity and all that, but when you cut out all the science, it just feels good, and there's a reason.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad you brought up the word meditation, because you know, I grew up where I grew up, it was considered a spiritual vortex, one of I think 7 or 8 in the United States. There was a reason why, you know, Hasidic Jews, born again Christians, Zen Buddhists, the hippies, as well as there was an ashram. That people came there from all over the world. And I remember, you know, trying to meditate and like repeating from the Swamis, like Om Namah Shivaya, and, you know, like trying to, and for some reason I couldn't think about nothing. It didn't work for me. I couldn't think about breathing out the bad stuff, breathing in the good stuff. Picture the quarter, the size going up your arm. I needed to like hear something, and music was able to do that for me. And that's funny, you know, that you're saying that, because I'll speak about my own recovery in that, And stress comes from right thinking about the future, worrying about the past. Like right now, everything right now in the present is perfect. So meditation, in my opinion, is a way to almost train your brain to kind of stay in the present. And so I use music to kind of help me, you know, do that. You know, that's what makes recovery for me more of a payoff, you know, than getting high. And so that's like the secret of how to stay, you know, in the present, how to stay grateful. That's really the secret. It's not about stopping. It's about staying stopped.
Yeah. So let's talk about what happens when someone calls up your hotline and go, hey, I need help.
Yeah. So most treatment centers do a pre-assessment. They get their clinical, medical, legal, financial information. We do that too. But in addition, what we'll do is I'll say, hey, you know, what's your favorite music? And everyone goes, mostly everyone goes, well, I like everything. And then, so what I help them is I'll narrow it down to a particular genre, and then I'll narrow it down to a particular artist. And eventually it always comes out. They usually have a favorite song. Everyone has a favorite song. They might need to be reminded of it. But if so, when I say, okay, Vanessa, you're ready to come into the treatment center. And let's say, you know, you say, Here Comes the Sun by the Beatles is my favorite song. And so when I pick you up from your house or the airport or wherever you're coming from, as soon as you get into the vehicle, that song is playing. And if you're not half out of it, it's the response is always the same. Oh my God, this is my favorite song. Do you like the Beatles? And my driver will go, yeah, but I heard you did. Right away, rapport is established. Right away, they feel heard versus being yelled at. We don't deal with the 2-week adjustment period to the new environment, right? Like it immediately sets forth a way of using the music as a catalyst to engage the therapeutic process. And so during the day, we have different, you know, individual and kind of group sessions. I even use music in interventions that I've done. I recently did an intervention with this very high profile district attorney who was very arrogant and nasty. And I thought to myself, wow, like this guy's gonna be tough. And the mother warned me about it. And you know what? I normally was trained, all right, everybody bring a letter and set boundaries. And this is the difference between support and enabling. And I'm not saying I didn't, you know, have to do all that too. But instead I asked the mother who just told me his father had just passed away. I don't know, a few months before. And I asked her, is there a song that you guys could remember growing up to where before he was using that would, and they said, yeah, no doubt about it. ABC by by the Jackson Five. And so I said to him, okay. I said, okay. So I get to the house and he's like, who are you? What are you doing here? I got to go back to work. And I was like, hey, listen, you know, I'm just kind of here to help because your mother and your family are really concerned about this. And before I get started, would you mind if I just put this song on? And he goes, yeah, whatever. I put the song on. Within like 5 minutes, they were all crying. To make a long story short, he ended up going to treatment. And as far as I know, he's still clean. So, you know, the point is that there's ways that you can, you know, use this that, you know, can improve outcomes. And I'm aware that what might work for you might not work for me. So that's one of the reasons why I also came up with music, as we've already talked about. It's like a universal language. You know, one thing I wanted to talk about was, you know, Face the Music Foundation, which is something I'm extremely proud of as well. If we have a few more minutes for that. Okay, cool.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that really frustrated me over the 30 plus years I've been doing this was not being able to help people unless they had money or insurance. And I think this is a worldwide thing. It's not just the US. And so I feel like it's a form of discrimination. And so why are we not allowing people to get help they need, good quality help in a timely fashion based on their socioeconomic background? That's ridiculous, in my opinion. So I created a foundation about 7 years ago called Face the Music Foundation. And the goal is to not only provide prevention, like you mentioned in the intro, to some of the, you know, high schools and middle schools and the community at large, but also while raising awareness and changing the stigma attached to it, exposing the myths, but also providing treatment scholarships to a variety of different treatment centers around our country where clients don't have money and or insurance. And again, we use music in everything we do with Face the Music as well. As a matter of fact, I'm not even that smart. A member from Aerosmith is the one who gave me the name to use because it's, you know, kind of means a couple of different things. There's an expression, right? Face the Music, you know? So that was, yeah. It's kind of like a play on words, but the bottom line, Vanessa, is we really want to, you know, expose, you know, look, put it this way. If 1 million people died in the past, I don't know, I'd say 7 to 8 years, which is about how many people have died in the US due to alcoholism and addiction related issues. If 1 million people died in the past 7 years because of a terrorist attack, we'd be at war now with like 10 countries, right? But yet this is somehow, you know, just looked at, you know, as a moral issue or so Face the Music was born out of that frustration. And again, when we go to the schools, I don't just go up there and talk with a slide deck and bullet points. I bring musicians with me. it engages the audience. Yeah, it makes it more memorable. So, you know, we've been really fortunate in raising a lot of money and kind of getting grants and being able to help a lot of people save a lot of lives who might not have had that opportunity if Face the Music wasn't around.
Yeah, that's a fantastic job you're doing. And it's such a great thing what you said is it's not a moral issue. People still sometimes have an idea that it's a character flaw or they're not strong enough or just snap out of it. And it's even harder sometimes for the addicts who want to get better that people around them don't understand. And they're either enabling them or they're not giving them the support they need. And so at one point they feel like, oh, screw it. It's just not worth my effort. Nobody
it's
cares.
A vicious cycle. It's such a vicious cycle.
Yeah. It's not a problem of just the addicts exactly. Needing to go somewhere and get themselves fixed. It's a problem that all the other people around them need to see.
And that's why we call it a family disease. You're exactly right, Vanessa. Yeah. The bottom line is that even if everyone is on the same page with the difference, like you said, between support and enabling or, you know, nurturing them or validating them with confrontation mixed in, there's no guarantees. But if we're not all on the same page, there's almost a guarantee it's not going to work. There are so many studies I've seen myself where when you have a positive, healthy support group and environment, it improves the prognosis, the success rates, you know, dramatically.
Yeah. But I guess if you live in a place where it's just really hard to get out of it, then you need to start somewhere. And having that foundation means there is a chance for these people
to get better. Yeah.
Right, because if they stay in the same place.
So here's how. Let me push back a little on that. Okay, I don't think Gia. I'm not saying you're not right. I agree that people sometimes need to be removed from their environment to get them a head start on their recovery. But I am also aware that geographical cures don't work either, because wherever you go, you got to take yourself with you. So. I actually have an example, as a matter of fact. I could think of a gentleman about a few years ago who was out of the Bronx, New York, which was in a pretty rough neighborhood. And he was in group sharing that, listen, where I grow up, I'm not going to do drugs anymore. I'm just going to sell them. And and you know, that's funny, but it, on another level, that was his truth. That was his reality. So because I am somewhat of a music aficionado, he said a statement that he said basically, and when people were confronting him about it, he was basically getting angry at them. And he was saying, tell me what the F am I supposed to do? So I got with him and I said, you know, that that one statement reminds me of a lyric from a well-known rapper called KRS-One. Have you ever heard of KRS-One? He goes, yeah, man, he's from the Boogie Down, which is a slang term for the Bronx. And so and I said, well, you know, he wrote a song called Love Is Gonna Get Ya. And one of the lyrics is, here comes Rob. He's cool and chivalry. He gives me 200 for a quick delivery. I do it once. I do it twice. Now there's steak with the beans and rice. Tell me what the F am I supposed to do? And immediately he knew, I knew where he was coming from versus, well, how would you do that different next time, Leroy? How would you, you know, like he, I, that's how I was trained, you know? And so like immediately we kind of clicked and bonded. And the reality is that he was able to kind of see that no matter where he was and the environment he was living in and the challenges and obstacles he was facing, if he didn't stay clean, he didn't have a shot at like anything else. And as far as I know, and now I'm going back like 2 years ago, I haven't talked to him in probably about 3 months, but I know he picked up a year and a half clean. Still living in the same neighborhood, and now he's using his own sobriety to help others.
Yeah, I think what I said earlier, and you're completely right in the sense that you at some point have to be okay with yourself wherever you are. What I meant was in the beginning, you do need a bit of a jump start. You know, if they're kind of stuck in the same routine, same pattern, something's got to break first. But ultimately, you're going to go back to your friends and family. You want to be comfortable in your own skin wherever you are. And so, yeah, you're right in the sense that you're giving them a chance so that they can bring back all this good stuff with them and almost supersede what got them bad in the first place and help others in the same position. True. And it almost sounds like you're a human jukebox, Paul.
No, I've been called a music aficionado. It's funny. I literally, just before I went on air with you, I was on the phone with a friend of mine who's a pretty well-known musician who wrote a very big hit song in 1978. And I remember, I didn't really like it, to be honest with you. I remember thinking, like, why does everybody like this song? It's really not. So what I did over the weekend was I just looked at the lyrics and I heard him kind of say it. And I called him and I said, hey, Richie, I just want to let you know, man, that song that you wrote in 78, I never really liked it. But now that I looked at the lyrics and kind of what you were actually saying, I kind of appreciate it now more. It's more metaphorical. Yeah, I get what you were kind of saying. And it was a good insight into kind of what you're doing now with your musical career. So, you know, you have to understand, Vanessa, when you get, I'll speak for myself, when I got to the very bottom of my addiction, where I literally burnt all bridges and I literally was depressed and suicidal and homeless. And the only companion I had was music. Does that make sense? And so I just kind of always, and even before addiction, like I mentioned, you know, years as growing up, you know, it just always, you know, just something was true about it. I can't really put words to it. It's almost trying to put human words to what I would call a, you know, spiritual experience. But, you know, I pay attention and I'm trying to use it for good, if that makes sense.
Yeah, of course. So for myself, I actually have a little Vanessa's Happy Place playlist. So whenever I hear a song, I'm not very good with matching the artist mm-hmm. to the song, but I know the songs, and the ones that I like, I saved them over the years. And so whenever I feel upset or frustrated or I had a bad day at work, then I come home and I play the music list, and I can't stop. I physically have to move to the music, and then you just wriggle around a bit. Nobody cares what you look like when you're down. You do a few moves, and within seconds, maybe a minute, I'll go from feeling miserable to feeling like, yeah, that wasn't so bad, just whatever. So that's kind of my little trick. Even this is before I met you, but do you have any tips or anything that you can give people that what can they do right away? It doesn't necessarily have to be addiction, but like, what can we use music
for? Yeah, great question. So first of all, this is not to be rude or critical of what you just said, but you're not that special. Everyone has that. No, seriously, like everyone, if they allow themselves to like sink into the music, whether it's dancing or just kind of spacing out or whatever, has the same effect. So seriously, like, isn't that cool how like we all, and that's my little trick, but no, that like that everybody, that's what I love about music. It's universal like that. So when my friends go through things, right? The old Paul Pellinger would have probably spewed out some cliches that I was taught in 12-step meetings. Live and let live, let go, this too shall pass, all. And I every once in a while still do that. But now what I do is I'll go, okay, I'm going to send you this song. Matter of fact, I remember the last song I sent a friend of mine literally 2 days ago. It was a song called, she was struggling with her marriage, and she was really having a rough time, making a decision on what to do because there's children involved. And so instead of going, it's okay, honor your truth, all that, I sent her a song by Bob Marley called Three Little Birds. And I told her to go in a private place where her husband and her children aren't around, put on some headphones and just listen to the song. And after, see if you feel better. And, woke up this morning to the rising sun. Don't worry, every little thing's going to be all right. That song. So, of course, she texted me back, and she's in California, a few hours different from Florida, and immediately said it worked. Like, nothing changed, but her perception of how she was feeling, she just had, a more optimistic kind of view. So I feel like we all have the ability to kind of, tune in, no pun intended, to any sorts of kind of music, even if it's music that you don't normally like listen to, as a way to kind of help you. Let me say one other thing and then I'll shut up. I think we talked about this last week. But oftentimes what I'll do is I'll test my, my theories out. And so I was literally at a stoplight a few months back. And on the right side, I have a convertible. And on the right side, there was a woman who was obviously a Democrat and a Hillary. She had a Hillary Clinton bumper sticker on her car. And on the left, I saw a guy in like a big pickup truck, and he had like a, I don't even want to say it on air, but it said, kneel for the flag, MF, or something like that. So I knew he was more of a, maybe a Trump supporter or a, Republican or something. And so what I did was I turned on a song and I cranked it up. It was a song by James Brown called I Feel Good. That song? And immediately she started, and I cranked it up. I got a good sound system. Of course I do, right? So immediately she started bopping her head, right? I looked over to the left and he was looking at me strange and he rolled down the window. He heard the music and all of a sudden he started bopping his head. I leaned back. They both were looking at each other, bopping their head to the music, and I just drove away. So if you're asking, right, for what people could do to potentially use music to help them, I would say what I've already mentioned, but use it to help other people will make you feel better as well, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, that's a great way, you know, if we can all gift a song to someone in need, you know, do it once a week, do it once at all. But if your friend texts you back like she did and said, thank you, I mean, that's A, free, B, makes you feel like an awesome human being. And thirdly, you've helped someone in need. So I guess
where does our discontent come from? It comes from self-centeredness, right? If you think about how AA was even started, Bill W. and Dr. Bob in 1935 figured out the way they can stay sober was to help others. Because if you, like the old saying, you can't keep what you have unless you give it away. And so that's really a way I think a lot of us can get through life on life's terms, is to become other-centered. Is try to love instead of be loved, and try to, you know, understand instead of trying to be understood. In other words, give that person what you want. And it seems to work.
World peace. That's all we want. None of this infighting, none of this, you know, left, right, you know, black, white, all these things. We're all united by music. Well, thank you so much, Paul. That was an amazing time talking to you.
Thank you very much. Anytime you ever want to, you know, reconvene or talk. Yeah.
A song recommendation. Anything.
I thank you for all the time. And I appreciate, you know, especially what you're doing, as I mentioned to you last time, your discipline as a doctor and being trained in just very, not rigid, but specific ways on medical model dealing with things. So thank you for people like you who are just even open-minded to having a conversation about stuff like this. No, really, I mean it from the bottom of my heart. I really appreciate it. Yeah. And I'm willing to bet, I could be wrong, that through this and through what you do, you're probably helping more people than you realize. And I hope that you keep going. Thank you. You too. Take care.
Have a great night.
Okay. Bye.
You can find us at anantawellbeing.com and follow us at anantawellbeing on Facebook and Instagram. If you like our podcast, please give us a 5-star review to help other like-minded people find us.